to the Brazilian people, in which he affirms that he will continue until the last consequence. Lula da Silva wrote, "When it was obvious that they would get me by force, without crime nor evidence, I decided to remain in Brazil and face my executioners. I know my place in history, and I know which is the place reserved for those who are prosecuting me. I'm sure justice will make truth prevail."
Juan Grabois, Pope Francis's special envoy and Justice and Peace Affairs advisor, has been barred from delivering a handwritten letter from the pontiff to former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Grabois, who attempted to hand over the message and a rosary in a visit Monday, was blocked from doing so by officials at federal police headquarters in Curitiba in southern Brazilian state of Paraná. Quote, "It's a serious incident," wrote Mauro Lopes of Brazil 24/7. Quote, "Barring the Pope's messenger will result in ample repercussions both nationally and internationally against the coup," he said, referring to Michel Temer, who became president of Brazil through what many describe as a parliamentary coup. Citing a recent homily by the Pope, which he condemned state coups sponsored by conservative media, a direct reference to Brazil, Lopes said the move was an insult. Quote, "It's an apparent paradox. In the largest Catholic country, the highest Catholic political leader is despised by thousands upon thousands of Catholics, starting with the leader of the coup, Michel Temer. On social media, conservative Catholics insult Lula, and the persistent hate campaign against Lula doesn't occur because they are Catholics, but they are fiercely right-wing."
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
On the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is from the House Un-American Activities Committee. And what they... the House Un-American Activities Committee, they're really weird, those people. The Ku Klux Klan, to investigate the Ku Klux Klan and complain that they're spending money on good time instead of rope. It's really very strange. It's a different country, man. And it's... But the last 4 years I spent in and out of the courts, and I learned some very groovy things. I learned, one, that... Well, first, a protest. Anybody who protests is very religious. Because that's all protest is... Then as long as the federal courts are open, there can't be any martial law, and I don't care if 9 million people sing their ass off, forget about it. The government's not set up. In other words, you can't do anything by marching. It's just forget about it. There's any kind of relief you want in the court. All of it. If I tell you that to go to any federal judge and tell him, we're here in some Alabama, just give him a piece of paper and say, I'm poor and I don't have an attorney. And I understand in the federal system that you have form of pauper's proceedings, where if a poor person comes and hasn't got counsel, you let him proceed for nothing in this court, and you'll get him counsel. Now, I got a group of people, and we want to march through the town. And we're made up of nuns and priests and rabbis and educators, and we're dressed well, and what our idea is that we'll march through the town and look well-dressed, and we'll impress the townspeople with our power. And they'll see that it's smart to desegregate and get some class. But the fear that we have is that it's quite inflammatory to these people who have never seen black and white people hold hands, and they might attack us. And if they attack us, we'll lose our point. Because what our point is to show how good it is to be integrated. So it'll be a barter communication system. And to say that if we make trouble, don't march, is no answer. So what we'd like, since there's no other adequate remedy law, to pray to this court will order the governor of the state to order out the National Guard and line the streets so we can do our march right and protect us in our rights. I'm sure that any federal judge will sign it. Because in the federal courts, you see, what's happened to the law system is that it's been argued in insurance offices. And there's, in other words, you can argue the fact, but you can't argue the law. A lot of people think that there's certain principles in law that they just mop like this. That's what will hang up is with the obscenity laws. Because they're very precise, and the people who are hung up with it are the religious people. The people who can see what's behind the law. And I always used to wonder about that. People say, well, geez, this guy's worrying that this is horny, and I never could figure it out. And what I figured out is they have a lower ignition point. They get hornier quicker.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Rindigina.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you speak? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Don't you have any empathy for what these people are going through? They have less than
Brian,
you do.
Guys,
Sarah, come on,
settle down.
Seriously.
I'm trying to be serious, but I'm not going to have you yell out of turn. Jill, please call.
It's a law, and they have, these people have nothing.
Hey, Brian, I know you want to get some more TV time, but that's not what this is
about.
I want to recognize you. Go ahead, Jill.
Honestly, answer the question. It's a serious question. These people have nothing. They come to the border with nothing, and you throw children in cages. You're a parent. You're a parent of young children. Don't you have any empathy for what they go through?
Jill, go ahead.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from an occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton, and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blocking to the people of the Fourth World from AboriginalNewsWire.tumblr.com and AboriginalPress.wordpress.com, as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my co-executive producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in unceded Chinook People's Territories in North America. I'm just going to get straight into it. No sugar, you know, no yeast. I don't know what to talk to you about. And seriously, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be cute. I really don't know. I don't know what to say. You know, because when you really take a look at what the fuck is going on, what is there to say? Seriously. I mean, real talk here. You know, what is there to say at this point? Paul Manafort, was that? Paul has pointed it. He's made a point of calling him Manafort. And I've known some giants that have also said that name could be out of French. I really don't give a fuck out of it. Fuck cares. Yeah. Whatever. You know, he's a crook. And I really don't give a fuck about that either, Frank. If he did his job. I mean, Joe Kennedy, the patriarch of the Kennedy clan out of Boston, was a bootleg. You know, the only reason that Roosevelt had any contact with him at all was the fact that he had money. You know, he used his criminal enterprise to break into mainstream society. Now, that's been done all over. You know, you've heard me talk about this on the show, in relation to capitalism. And you've heard me talk about that in relation to African-American politics and Native American politics, in the sense that, you know, these two groups have never really used the criminal underworld as a come-up for their population. They've used it as a come-up for themselves as individuals. You know, Dickie Wilson comes to mind. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of people right now who are probably upset. Like, you know, who the fuck is this cat? You know, is he really Native? You know, who the fuck is he? He's not Dakota. He shouldn't have a goddamn thing to say about Dickie Wilson. Dickie Wilson was part of the Goon Squad. Matter of fact, Dickie Wilson was the Goon Squad. He was the chief of the goddamn Goon Squad. For those of you who know the history of the American Indian movement, the Goon Squad went after everybody that would be today what you understand as a Native American activist. And I'm not even talking about and I'm saying this with all due respect, you know, the militant cats behind the American Indian movement. I'm saying, you know, it was a liberation movement. It was. Now, had it gone on and matured, maybe we would have seen something else. But at the stage that they were at, you know, when you look at Anna Mae Quash, what happened to her, when you look at Lena Peltier, who I support, who was under a hell of a lot of pressure, who believed that, you know, from what I've heard, that Anna Mae Quash was an agent. She was being badjacketed by the agents. At the same time, right, they had, what was his name, Dwayne Loop. I was just talking with your husband about this. I can't remember his name, because there was a few, but there was one who, he testified. He went to court. He testified. Dwayne somebody. Somebody out there listening to this knows what I'm talking about. I want to say Dwayne Brewer, but I don't know. You know, don't quote me on that, because I'm not sure, and I don't have the information in front of me, and I don't really even know right now where to ask Lupin to go look on the net to even find him. Thickshovel.com is one resource, and you should look at that any goddamn day. It's even still up on that site. But in any case, you know, she was badjacketed as a snitch. At the same time, you had people who were in the movement who were, not her, but motherfuckers who actually were, right? Who were, you know, in meetings, you know, in planning meetings, in organizing positions on the security force, because they had, you know, charges on them from previous shit. You know, it wasn't a matter of belief. It wasn't like, oh, I really believe in what the FBI is doing. Because, you know, the Federal Bureau for Intimidating Aboriginals, you know, I mean, they don't, you know, they're only doing it to help us out. It wasn't about that. I mean, do you really think Dickie Wilson was working with the feds because he really thought the feds were good people that gave a fuck about Indian folks? No, it was a path to power for him. It was a path to money for him. And you know, it's like when we talk about racism here, and hey, I can talk about racism every fucking day. We can talk about it today. You dig? You know, Indian country has its own fucking forms of racism too. You know, like every other goddamn ethnic. Because, you know, really, truly, and I'm really getting tired of black and native people. And I can talk this shit because I'm part of both goddamn groups. This is the new America, right? And we're supposed to accept, you know, all kinds of fucking shit now. But we don't accept certain fucking realities. And we can't even have a conversation because there's so much fucking ignorance running about. Look. You got people who are, because what? I'm identified as a black Indian, right? Which I do not really particularly fucking appreciate. Because you don't hear about white Indians, do you? You know, they're just native. But deep in Indian country, like I said, you got your FBIs, you know, the real fucking FBIs, right? Full-blooded Indians. And with them, it's a different, you know, it's a different thing. Because if you, you know, start getting into percentages and shit with blood quantum, what have you, you know, they're full. So when you talk about your 116th, 168th, and 125th, or, you know, in the case of Oklahoma and Cherokee, just having a fucking relative that you can directly fucking trace the lineage to on any of the five recognized roles. Because you and I talked about that here too, right? There's like 11 roles, but there's only five that are recognized by the feds. And it's what's recognized by the feds that makes a difference. But at the same time, earlier today, we tweeted the American Indian Information Center. They have a Twitter account, and they put up an article from Slate talking about how disenrollment is back up because, you know, a lot of people are just being kicked out because, you know, as the casino money rolls in, the more people there are that you have to spread this shit out about. Hey, you know, who the fuck needs all of these folks? So let's separate the wheat from the chaff, right? And, you know, the criteria can be really fucking arbitrary. Now, one of the reasons why I'm saying this is because, you know, I'm from Newark. And, you know, even though, yeah, you know, I grew up a little bit in Philly, you know, I was shuttled between two households, right? So, but most of my coming of age, I suppose, years, my salad days, whatever the fuck you want to call it, you know, was in Newark. Right. And of course, you know, going up to Manhattan in New York City to explore everything that was happening up there. And that's, you know, when I was in Philly and started doing it, you know, started finding out what was going on in Philly and then started going down to D.C. So, OK, you get what the point that I'm trying to fucking make here is I'm from the East Coast. And when you're from the East Coast, and even though I've been living out here in Portlandia for a while. And I have no real beefs with PDX, you know. PDX is what it is. I like living in Eugene, too. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was okay, you know. It is what it is. But, you know, confrontation up here is really, it's difficult. And one of the things about, you know, like everybody talks about people in New York City. And I'm not talking about people who go to New York City. I'm talking about people who are born and raised there. It's a different thing. It's not just the accent. It's a whole different swag. You know, it's the same thing with the East Coast in general. You know, when you come out here to the West Coast, it is definitely a fucking West Coast. You know, it's regional. Now, you know, that blurs a little bit because you get people to move around, you know, especially nowadays, there's a great migration because of lack of work, lack of being able to afford to live where the fuck you live with the work that you have, with the work that you can get. You got a lot of people out here with degrees. I mean, it's almost getting like the Arab Spring, but you got a lot of people with education that can't fucking find work, let alone pay off their goddamn student. Right, but this is the wonderful world of capitalism. You're not supposed to ask any goddamn questions. But, you know, what I was getting, I forgot to ask you, Frank. Because really, you know, I don't know how to say this because, you know, and I apologize to Radio Free Kansas for being late with this broadcast, you know, because we had a hard time getting in here. But then at the same time, you know, when I had seen you during the week, and you had asked my wife, you know, it's like, when the fuck is he gonna, you know, when are we gonna go back in? Because you had time and then I didn't have time. And then at one point we both had time and then we just kind of didn't give a fuck. Because, yeah, that's right. We had read something in the news and we were talking about it and ended up getting so goddamn down about it that we couldn't even come in and talk about it. So, you know, it was not, I can't even remember what it was. Do you? No, it wasn't, guys. We had talked about it since. Oh, wait a minute. Well, a whole lot of water's been under the bridge since we've been in here. Roseanne. I mean, not that I give a fuck. I mean, she's blocked me a long time ago. And, you know, you can take that as a bit of honor or as what is. To me, is what is. You know, I called her on her bullshit. Because I didn't understand what the fuck she was saying. I can't even remember what it was about. But it doesn't really fucking matter, does it? She's a Looney Tunes. And, what's that? Yeah, I had mentioned that kind of shit to my wife. Look, I talk about her, but she's not political. You know, my wife's a Christian Palestinian. She's not political at the fuck all. I mean, it's a mixed marriage, really, in that sense. I mean, she's about shoes and bags and jewelry. Yeah, you know, I mean, she doesn't give a fuck. Registries and shit. You know, she don't give a fuck about politics, man. You know, but when you see what's happening in Gaza, that's it. We were talking about the young nurse. And forgive me, please, everybody, for not remembering her name. But the 21-year-old Palestinian sister who was shot and killed by a fucking IDF sniper. You know, I mean, really, look, the state of Israel was an individual. What would happen under international law, under the law of any goddamn country, of any state, any municipality, anywhere on this fucking planet, any village? You know, no indigenous society would tolerate this shit. You know, but you know, and then they can talk about their history and mine, really, if you really want to get down to it. Because, again, you know, there's so many different ways I want to go. There's so many different ways I could goddamn go on this broadcast, but I'm getting tired. I'm so fucking frustrated. You know, I've talked about this before. I'm not able to write because of what is happening politically. And, you know, fucking Manafort and Papadopoulos and, you know, and Putin and all of this, it's in your fucking face. You know, and now they're using Jeff's, you know, fucking Sessions. Why is it that that little goddamn gnome cannot stop bouncing foot to fucking foot? You know, I mean, I'm not into insulting Southerners. I'm really not. No, you know, I mean, you don't hear me. Nah, you know, you don't hear me calling people rednecks and shit. You don't hear me calling people crackers and shit like that. You know, even though I actually know what the fuck those terms mean, you know, like I said, I'm not a bigot. I've dated women that I could get, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I dated a chick who made it really clear that she was redneck and that crackers were from Georgia and that she liked her 7 and 6 and shit. And I mean, Seagram's and fucking ginger ale and shit, you know, her fucking 6 slash ginger ale. And it's like, look, she was cool. And we had a good time for what it was. And she made it clear that if it wasn't for the fact that she was past the Mason-Dixon line, on the wrong side, as she put it, the Mason-Dixon line and shit, there was no way that we could be fucking around with each other. And I'm not, I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that motherfucking old. But I'm old enough to remember that having a white friend back in the day was impossible. Outside of the classroom, I mean, outside of the literal classroom, when I did end up going to school with white children, out of the literal classroom, no, everything split up into tribes. And you've heard me, you know, whine and what did somebody say, Lou? What did he tell me? At least it was face to face. You know, he's like, you whine and bitch and bleed all the fucking time. I heard your broadcast, you whine and bitch and bleed all the time about black people not accepting you. You a nigga, motherfucker. And it's like, okay, well, if I'm black, and I pointed out three incidences that he knew about, because this obviously is a member of my circle. And then he had to pause and go, okay, yeah, you got a point. Because I see, yeah, what you see, you know, motherfuckers are still talking. I mean, look, hey, well, people don't like the shit that I say. Hey, I don't give a fuck, man. You know, show me where I'm wrong. I'm always open to reinterpretation, but you got to show me that I'm wrong. Just don't tell me what you said is fucked up. Show me where I'm wrong. You know, if black people cannot protest the goddamn NFL, don't talk to me about Dr. Martin Luther King. I mean, we already see Black Lives Matter has fell to the motherfucking wayside, right? Black Lives Matter has fallen to the fucking wayside. Black Lives Matter, for the most part, is pretty much fucking done. That shit is done. And, you know, it's not the fault of the movement. I mean, I've talked about this before with the Aboriginal News. I just talked about it, so I'm not going to go into it and go through the archives if you want to, you know, see, you know, really what I was trying to explain. But, you know, we tried. You know, this shit was split between myself here in the United States, somebody in South Africa, and someone in Australia. And you know how Australia deals with the fucking internet, and you know how this shit deals with the motherfucking internet, okay? I mean, isn't this the whole point of why I can't even remember his name right now, even though his face is in my mind. The cat is living in Russia. Oof. Snowden. Edward Snowden. Thank you, Luke. That Edward Snowden, you know, who... And again, you know, I mean, look at this. We're talking about Manafort, right? Look at this. Edward Snowden. Look, Edward Snowden, just like fucking Julian Assange, is a libertarian. And when he did what he did, on principles that he has about himself. You know, now, how would he feel about racism? How would he feel about the Klan? How would he feel about the white supremacist, you know, slash alt-right movement? You know, no one's asking him that. You know, no one's asking Julian Assange that shit, who has a fucking reputation for making comments against Jews. Not against Israel, not against Zionism. He's made comments and Twitter posts and shit that were really hairy in terms of Jews. He is also, just like Edward Snowden, a contributor to the Ron Paul and Rand Paul goddamn political funds. If you remember, you know, going on my Twitter feed, which you can follow me at The Angry Indian on Twitter, I've, you know, written about him. And you can even go to my blog, Aboriginal Writer. WordPress.com. And you can check out, you know, what I've said about Ron Paul. And what I said about Ron Paul is that Ron Paul is a bigoted, terroristic son of a bitch, because he wrote a goddamn article in Ron Paul newsletter, or the Ron Paul report, political report, whatever the fuck it was. And, you know, I've talked about this before on the show, too. I used to have that sent to me. There was a fella in the South. He since passed, right? And he was a white man, and he was a, you know, cool, you know, cat, you know, John, you know, he's long passed, but he was one of those underground journalists that I used to work with. And what he used to do, because that showed an interest in his shit, he would bundle the Klan paper, the Ron Paul shit, the Patriot Party newspaper, you know, all of this white supremacist crap. And he would, you know, put it in a folder, and once a month, he would send me this shit. That's how I found out about Screwdriver and Ian Stewart and Blood and Honor and what the fuck was going on in Europe. You know, that's how I found out about that shit. And, well, yeah, Luke, because that crap started creeping down there when punk, you know, started getting a little more. And when I say punk, I'm really probably talking about hardcore. You had hardcore on the East Coast, and then you had hardcore in L.A. And, you know, when I first started, you know, going to shows, it was in D.C., so fucking, you know, when I was in D.C., trying to remember who you had the Bad Brains down there. I mean, you know, well, everybody knows the Bad Brains, you know, but there was Riot, Krieghoff. I mean, you know, there was all kinds of things that were going on. And, you know, and that is a scene in and of itself. But it's a scene that's kind of strange because it mixed, I don't even know how to define this, because real punk was in 75. Some will say 77, I suppose. I'm willing to say 75. I'm willing to go to motherfucking 70, and I'll tell you why. There was a black band from the state of Vermont where there's not too many goddamn Negroes at all, ever. Still not. Anyway, state of Vermont, man, they were a band called Death, and there was like a rumor about them, and I guess supposedly sometime in the 1980s, I got to hear a cassette from Death, and I understand that there's a documentary, and some of that stuff has been reissued, which, you know, isn't a big surprise. It deserves to be out there. I mean, I can't remember too much about it. I mean, you had, what, Living Color, that was one. I mentioned the Bad Brains, really, right? There was a couple. They didn't really go nowhere. Well, none of those bands really went anywhere, per se. And it kills me that I just realized some of them, because I was looking up Nazi music. You know, this is what I'm supposed to be talking about this. And, what the fuck? The Last Resort, which used to be a skinhead mug shop in London. Want to say East London, South, no, South London. Luke. Well, because your husband's mud, and he knows about this. No, I don't. I don't know enough about it. But anyway, they named themselves after this shop. And, what do you want to call it? I remember hearing this shit before. You know, they used to get mentioned with Screwdriver and what have you. And, yeah, you know, fucking, they're still, I mean, how the fuck old are these guys? I mean, they're still out there. There's another, I guess an American version of that would be, what, Agnostic Front? They're from the hardcore scene. You remember that? Because they used to play in New York quite often. They were from New York. Yeah, but it was close. Like, you know, Missing Foundation. You know, I remember when they went down to Philly. That was fucking Gigi Allen. And that was just, you know, punk to the fucking extreme. I mean, was that even considered hardcore? You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I have a hard time relating Afro punk now. Because, and yeah, I know I'm probably going to get some bad emails about this shit. But and yeah, drop us a line in terms of email, you know. gmx.pt is the carrier, but you want to write us at fourthworldradio@gmx.pt. That's numeral 4 world radio@gmx.pt. So why did I even get on to this? Oh, yeah, trying to explain how fucking Nazi music got down in Brooklyn. Yeah, you know, I mean, it came along with that bullshit because, you know, they were punks and skinheads. never really remember seeing too many mods or shows like that, unless they were dating punk girls or some shit. Dating skin girls, so, you know, they normally all punk skin, whatever. They didn't, no. Soul and R&B and ska and rock steady doesn't seem to really go with hardcore. You can understand why. I mean, when you look at, what do you call it, traditional skins, right? And ska, whatever. And then you look at the hardcore cats, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. Same thing, like I said, you know, I mean, punk, as I remember it, you know, when I was really young, they wore suits. You know, kind of what you see now, actually. You know, cats wearing suits and fucking Converse. You know, and wearing training shoes. Because that's what they were doing. They were wearing Keds, fucking Converse, high tops, right? And you know, in black and dark blue suits, you know, red suits with thin ties and all that kind of shit. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's funny how things come back and totally have no representation with how that shit actually first came out, right? I haven't really thought about that, Luke. You know what? We didn't even bring that up when we were talking about it the other day. Because, yeah, I mean, and what kills me is, you know, the Sex Pistols is supposed to represent, you know, punk, right? When anybody who knows anything knows that the Sex Pistols were created like the Backstreet Boys. Like boys in the band. I mean, Malcolm McLaren, who already he had a shop in the King's Road. That I know. And, you know, came up with this idea to come up with the band. To sell his goddamn clothes. He figured, well, this is a way to sell this shit. He was a 100% pure capitalist. And see, and that's the one thing about mods, man, that you fucking at least agree with. Mods are capitalists, and they're honest about it. You know, whereas with punk, you know, it gives credit to the Sex Pistols. And what did I tell you? I saw somebody who I asked her where she got her... It was an X-ray specs shirt. And she told me that she paid like $115 for this shit. And I was like, really? So, you know, I mean, you know, the whole idea of punk being anti-capitalist, I don't know where the fuck y'all got that from. You know, Johnny Rotten is a multi-millionaire. You know, you keep, you know, it's like focusing and centering all this shit on Sid Vicious, you know, and especially because of the way it was in Nancy Spongy, you know, the way he, you know, nobody knows what the fuck happened in that hotel, you know, and anyone on the East Coast who's, you know, been out there, it shit knows that the St. James Hotel was a spooked, crazy ass motherfucking place, man. You know, that place had a reputation for madness. So, you know, that shit was what the fuck it was. And I have no idea how the fuck we got on this because we were talking about that. Because I'm tired of talking about this crazy shit. That's what it is. I mean, we had toyed one time here about doing a fucking paranormal show. And what I mean by that is, you know, people calling in and telling me what the, you know, to talk to me about what the fuck they think they saw. You know what I mean? You know, what they think they saw, or what they think they hear banging in their homes and all that type of shit. I don't know, because I just wanted to do something different. And like I said, you know, talking about what's going on in Gaza and how that 8-month-year-old fucked me up and how hearing about this 21-year-old, you know, Luby and I couldn't even come in the fucking studio because it's just tragic. It's just fucking tragic. Then there's a school shooting every other motherfucking day. There's black people being fucking killed every day. And then what was that other story that pissed me off? I think it happened since... Yeah, it hasn't happened. Yeah, well, we haven't talked about it since we've been here the last time because we haven't been in here. A black man was killed by the fucking police. Now, he was shot through his goddamn garage door. He was not the person that they were looking for. He did not have a weapon. He did not threaten them. He was trying to protect his fucking family because this was in the middle of the night. And he realized that the police were running around trying to catch somebody. And he didn't know who the fuck they were looking for, and figured, well, he might as well close his garage fucking thing, because he left it open, to keep whoever the fuck it is that they're looking for from getting into his house and doing damage to his family. So what they do? They shoot him through the fucking garage door because they saw the door going down. They saw a nigga and they shot. They killed this man. They murdered this man, really. And the way that the state deals with it, these two motherfuckers are still on the force. They're still getting paid. They didn't lose any goddamn pay, I would think. They didn't lose any money, right? And the court, the judge, whoever the fuck this was, they found the officers negligent, responsible, however you want to put it, because I don't remember, I don't have it in front of me. Don't quote me. But quote me on this, though, because even Fox News reported this, and they reported it wrongly, but the way that they reported it wrongly was probably how they really fucking felt about it. The court in this case awarded the survivors, which was the wife and the two children that this black man was trying to protect. And I'm not going to sit here and hold my crotch and talk about the strong black man, this Afro, you know, this black man. You know, no, I'm not doing that, because see, black men in that sense, y'all can kiss my motherfucking ass. After what happened to Corinne, what the fuck was her name? Corinne, well, the sister who stood off the motherfucking SWAT team with her son, Corinne Gaines. Thank you, Luke. You know, the woman, the black woman, you know, the strong black woman, okay, who wrapped her hair every goddamn day, who was Afrocentric to a motherfucking T, okay? A beautiful black woman at that. And if you're saying I'm sexist for that, fuck you. I got something to say about Me Too as well, in regards to this type of shit. And you know, a motherfucking strong-ass black woman, Corinne Gaines, you can find her poetry on YouTube. Yo, she stood down the goddamn SWAT team, wherever the fuck she lived, with her son, her infant fucking son, who was shot in the goddamn arm by this fucking SWAT team. We don't know who the fuck fired first. All we know is that she had a shotgun and that they had surrounded the motherfucking house. They were looking for her motherfucking live-in husband. They were looking for her common-law husband, who took the baby that they had together. His baby, right? And those of you out there who know what the fuck I'm talking about, know what the fuck I'm talking about. You hear me? He took his baby and got out a side door somehow. They got his ass a block or two later. But he left her there. So you hard-ass black men that want to talk all this super macho shit, explain that to me. Because they were Afrocentric. They were Hoteps. They were Hoteps. And she was like 20 years younger than him, right? Because she was barely 21, I believe. And she had already had a child with this motherfucker, man. And he left her. He cut out and left. And left her with the shotgun and her child from a previous relationship. So I'm sorry, man. You know, y'all motherfuckers with this macho shit, you know, y'all can save that bullshit. Tricks of kids, okay? I don't have time for it. All you Hotep motherfuckers lost all your credibility when Corinne Gaines went down like that. So I don't want to hear it. But in this case, this man just got the fuck up out of bed, you know, probably looked at his wife and said, hey, you know, whoever the fuck they're looking for, you know, that motherfucker could probably get in the house and try to hide out. So he went down to close his goddamn garage door. They heard some noise, saw a nigga, and just let off. You know, could they call it contagious shooting now? Contagious shooting. You know, once they start shooting, they can't stop. You know, that explains why they reload. They just can't stop. Remember the chick that shot Terrence Crutcher? Who's now a deputy in another motherfucking municipality? Because she was, you know, temporarily deaf. She shot Terrence Crutcher multiple times. Betty Shelby. you know, who was a serious pot smoker before she became a police officer, who had beat up two of her fucking boyfriends and shit, her living boyfriends. She was a domestic violence abuser. This woman. I don't give a fuck about the pothead shit, but you know, when it came to Trayvon Martin, he was a pothead, right? Well, she was a pothead. Different rules, different skin tone, different rules. So what I'm getting to with brother who was murdered here by the police, and Black Lives Matter has absolutely no motherfucking power, because they figure that they would go and embarrass the old Jew, Bernie Sanders, who is a total fuck up when it comes to Gaza. And he's not all that good when it comes to guns. And that's because Vermont doesn't have a gun problem. But at the same goddamn time, they went and they fucked with him. They thought that would get them in with Hillary Clinton, who then turned around, Miss Super Predator Hillary Clinton, and then fucked them completely. Because Black Lives Matter should be able to do something about the fact that the court decided, in the case of this brother, that they were going to award the survivors his estate. Now, this is the way the court put it. We're going to award his estate $4. Let that trickle down for a minute, because you didn't hear me wrong. They awarded his family $4 motherfucking U.S. dollars. $2 to his wife and $1 for each child. And as his lawyer told the press just outside the goddamn courtroom, this was a way to discourage and disparage this family for having the nerve to sue the city for the death of her husband. Because the way that the police and the city had it worked out, it was just a motherfucking accident. These things happen. Niggas get shot by the police. Why are you mad? These things happen, right? So, you know, I'm supposed to come in here every week and talk about this shit and be okay? How the fuck can I be okay talking about this? No, I didn't know this, man. No, I don't know this family, but it's still fucking, you know, it's like a stab in my goddamn heart. And then it's the biggest stab in the heart when, you know, I've done what I've done. And I shouldn't have to repeat it and go through the fucking archives, you know. I've done what I've done. And then I got to have, you know, these Hotep motherfuckers and then, you know, some black women who are just on this tip that, you know, you're not black enough. And you say, well, what do I have to do to fucking be black enough? You know, say, well, what the fuck is black enough? You know, and then Colin Kaepernick, people are still talking shit behind his back. Is he really black? It hasn't stopped. You know, Jesse Ware still gets it when his name comes up in the news. You know, and it's funny because they like, you know, bleach-skinned Beyonce, and they like all these other bleach-skinned red bones. But, you know, they don't like Colin Kaepernick. They question him, his blackness. They don't like Jesse Williams. They question his blackness. Sean King, they question his blackness. So if they saw me, they question my blackness for goddamn sure, you know. And depending on which Native American community I'm in, I'm either accepted or I'm not. You know, so on the East Coast, I'm accepted because natives on the East Coast look a certain way, right? But then you come out to the West Coast, it's a totally different dynamic. It's a different mixture. You know, white people on the West Coast look completely fucking different than the West Coast. I mean, the East Coast. Look who's in the East Coast. Look who's in the middle. Look who fucking went and populated the West Coast. That's why it fucking looks different. It's the what is. And if you understand the history of the country, you understand what's going on, then okay. But see, if you don't, then, you know, you come up with all kinds of ignorant bullshit. You know, and even with science now, it's getting really fucking weird because supposedly, if this place is really doing this work correctly, someone, I believe this First Nations person in Canada, sent blood from a chihuahua. Now, I don't know how they got blood from a chihuahua. You know, as an animal person, I'm kind of afraid to ask how the fuck they got the blood from the animal in order to do this. But supposedly, they got some, they wanted to check to see what the, you know, if it was legit, you know, what the, you know, whether or not the ship was correct in terms of being able to suss out Native American ancestry through DNA analysis. Now, we all goddamn know that, of course, you can fucking break this shit out through DNA analysis, but it's getting murky, isn't it? Because there's so many fucking people that are mixed. And you know, the Americas are populated by different waves of fucking Native people from Asia. And if you don't like what I'm saying, then there's no point in you listening to this program any fucking longer. That's the scientific what is. It's not anti-indigenous at all. That actually fucking cements your goddamn presence here. And we really need to stop this shit. You know, I mean, same thing with, in a sense, you know, our black fellas, our cousins down in Australia, you know, down under, it's not anti them. Even though they have their belief system, keep your belief system. But scientifically speaking, you walked out of Africa a long motherfucking time ago, man. Probably some of the first people who left. Which is why a lot of Hoteps try to claim them, but they're not understanding that, you know, what you consider to be black is not what the fuck, you know, it has no meaning in terms of this scientifically. There are so many human groups that do not exist anymore. I mean, there was some remains found about 10 years ago, maybe longer, in Siberia. No, not Siberia, in central China. Asian features, the whole bit, but red hair. And it was a spiritual person because he had a ton of, it was a male, he had a ton of curios, talismans, and a huge bag of marijuana on him and all this kind of shit. So, you know, it was obviously a holy person who was buried out there. A spiritual person, what have you, was buried out there. But, you know, all the features of modern Chinese, you know, as we understand today, Han Chinese anyway, but with red hair. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, humans, we've moved around. I mean, what the fuck? You know, it's like, do you really think that people stayed in one goddamn place their entire motherfucking existence? If you believe that, you're a fucking fool. You know, it's like how Germans, like the Nazis, tried to claim the whole Herman the German bullshit, that these early Germanic tribes that ran into the Romans were the ancestors of the modern Germans. And we know that now to not be true. That these were migrating fucking peoples. And then you had the Northmen, right? The Vikings coming down. You know, again, a Germanic people, right? You know, all the way down to England and shit. You know, the Angles and the Saxons. When you talk about Britain, when you talk about Great Britain, who are the British? What language are they speaking? They're not speaking Gaelic. They're not speaking Manx in France, right? I mean, look at the Philippines. You know, I'm Ilocano, and just this past weekend, I went to a family get-together. Not my actual Philippine family, but extended, you know, family. And, you know, there was adobo, and there's pancit, and, you know, there's a lot of lumpia, there was bangus, you know, there was everything. And my favorite dish guy then didn't go on, right? So, you look at, you know, I'm Ilocano. So, there were people there who were Pakistanan, Ilocano. Of course, you had your Tagalog, then you had people from Basayan, right? You know, people from Zamboanga and shit, family ties in Zamboanga. So, you know, there were, like 86 different languages before the motherfucking Spanish came in. And there was Buddhism there before the Spanish came in. There was Islam in the Philippines before the Spanish came in, all throughout Indonesia, Malaysia, what have you. People migrate, man. People move the fuck around. Now, of course, there's various reasons. You have your natural disasters. You just have your natural migrations in terms of following vegetation, in terms of following game. I can't remember the name of the author. Guns, Germs, and Steel. Now, is it perfect? Probably not. I mean, he admits where there's speculation in it, but it's, at least it's not wild goddamn speculation. Like Ivan Van Sertum. I mean, there were things that he was, you know, correct about, and a lot that he wasn't on. You know, we can't do that and be accurate. But see, here's the thing. You know, however the fuck they got this blood, man. You know, they sent this shit to this lab, and it came back that the Chihuahua is 20% Native American, and obviously they didn't seem to realize that the blood was canine and not human. So, you know, I have talked about this in terms of justice here. You know, there's somebody is doing time right now for where they've had to drop, at least that I'm aware of, 200 some odd cases. And I believe there were eight, like 100. What do you say? There was like 18. Lupe's telling me that she believes it was 1,800 cases, drug-related cases in Connecticut that were related to one lab. And it turned out that detectives were paying this woman, this particular scientist, to fast-track cases, to prove people guilty when they weren't, to basically frame people. So I haven't heard about anything happening to the police officers in question. On the other hand, I've heard a lot, though, about her, because she's been served, and she's got to pay a heavy goddamn fine, and some of these people have been released, but the bottom fucking line is, this has happened. And then we had the two judges in Pennsylvania, or was it Jersey? I want to say it was Pennsylvania State, where they were getting kickbacks for having adolescents sent to juvenile detention. They got paid for this. One is in prison, I know, or at least went to prison. But, I mean, he laughed and smiled about the whole fucking thing, and apparently he kept his money, these two motherfuckers. So, you know, and now we got Trump's motherfucking mural up at a goddamn immigration detention fucking center. A fucking immigration gulag. There's his goddamn portrait up. There's his fucking portrait up. So how can I come in here and talk about this shit and be okay? I can't. I can't, you know, even with the Me Too thing, and I say this quick, you know, because there's some women that are like, oh, how come you don't talk about Me Too? And it's like, what do you mean? I talk about female, misogyny here on a regular basis. Maybe I don't talk about it as often as you want. Maybe with the times that you listen to the show, I'm not fucking talking about it. Because I told you, you know, there are people who have done that about Democracy Now, black folks.
They don't talk about black people.
What the fuck are you talking about? Yes, they do. They're not talking about your particular fucking pet, you know, issue right now. And they're not fucking talking about it all fucking, the entire fucking broadcast, every fucking broadcast. Just, some of you understand what I'm saying about this. You know, for a lot of fucking people, they're not talking about what I want to, you know, deal with, or what deals with, you know, with me. Then fuck it. They're not talking about any goddamn thing. Because it's all about me. And we have a society that it is all about us. And this is where Me Too is. Me Too has become all about us. Now, I have defended my position in terms of the sister that started this shit. You know, nobody's talking about her. And I've talked about why we're not talking about her. Because she doesn't look like fucking Beyonce. Alright? That's the first thing. And if you don't like what I'm saying, then prove me the fuck wrong. Because see, she was pretty. We'd be talking about this shit all the goddamn time. But she's a black woman and she doesn't look like Beyonce. So we're not motherfucking talking about it. And when we do talk about it, we wait for certain people to talk about it. So Rose McGowan and whatever white woman you want to pick on. I mean, yeah, they got on Bill Cosby. Why did they get on Bill Cosby? Well, Bill Cosby's a fucking pig. Bill Cosby, you know, despite what the hoteps want to tell you, Bill Cosby is like, yeah, I bought this bullshit to drug a woman so I can have sex with her. So he's already admitted to being a fucking pig. So anything that comes after this bullshit, that's it. This shit, well, you know, why is there a discussion? He's admitted to doing this. Why is there a discussion? But he's black, so they came down on him. Now, Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein is caught on fucking audio trying to bully a woman, a model, into his goddamn hotel room. He's a fucking pig. And we all know that there are motherfuckers out there like that. You know, look at the motherfucker, Brock Turner. He only got what? He didn't even serve his entire bullshit pissy sentence for raping a girl behind a goddamn garbage pail. You know, but Me Too has not really harped on that too much, have they? Right? So they've used it as a qualifier rather than as why they still not hammering that motherfucker. He's going to be able to go on with his life. And I've pointed out that there are black men who have been falsely accused of fucking rape, and there are white women, a few lately, only because of the internet, who are being prosecuted for falsely accusing black men of sexual assault and other things. But, you know, look at the woman who falsely accused Emmett Till. She's still alive. Why isn't Me Too going after her? Why isn't Me Too and Black Lives Matter, for that matter? Why are they not going after her?
since they wait to be, you know, to be so Cracker Barrel racist and shit from the South, like I was mentioning Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is exactly what the fuck he is. He, you know, and I can call him a gnome and a troll and all that kind of shit, and that's stupid because he is what he is. If I don't need to insult him, he's a little fucking nobody white man from the fucking Cracker Barrel racist motherfucking South. That bullshit that he pulled, you know, for those of us who are Catholic, right, who were raised Catholic anyway, yet despite my Jewish background, I was raised Catholic. You know, Romans 13 has been used to justify the Nazis. It's been used to justify lynching. It's been used to justify slavery. It's been used to justify misogyny. It's been used to justify colonialism. It's been used to justify imperialism. It's been used to justify the fucking Palmer raids. It's been used to justify the crackdown on the American Indian movement. It's been used to justify the crackdown on the Black Panther Party. So, you know, it was used to fucking justify the COINTELPRO crackdown on the Reverend Martin Luther King. So, you know, are we really having the discussions that we should have? No. You know, I mean, I hear that now Jamie Foxx and Sylvester Stallone have been named. Morgan Freeman has been named. But yet, you know, Trump, is Me Too going after Trump? No. Is Me Too going after Fahrenheit? No. But they certainly drummed at the Democrat, though, Al Franken, out of the goddamn government. Even though he was contrite, hadn't actually done what the fuck that they made it out. You know, he calls himself being funny, and yeah, it was sexist, but he's not the only goddamn comedian that has done that. Then that means Andrew Dice Clay doesn't have a fucking career anymore. There's a whole bunch of fucking... Lisa Napanelli then doesn't have a career anymore. You know, I mean, at what fucking point, right? Sexist and all that kind of shit, yes, but see, they've, you know, we as a society have allowed the fucking Nazis to dictate how this shit is going to go. You can't talk to me about Me Too and expect me to take you seriously. And you're not going to talk about motherfucking other goddamn crimes that happen to people who are not white women in the mainstream. Now, you know, like I said, I'm from fucking the East Coast. There used to be a cat. I knew him personally. His name was Donnie DuPont. He's passed away. He's transitioned. He died from an AIDS-related illness. And the reason I say that, the reason I point that out, because, you know, he was a friend of mine. We used to work on activist shit together. And he was one of those people that was up and down the East Coast, you know, sleeping on in squats, sofa surfing, you know, staying at anarchist houses and what have you. He was a legitimate grassroots down there activist. Right, and he did his own fucking journalism. He and I were writing sometimes, occasionally, with the same news sheets. You had the Shadow in New York. Any of you remember that one? I mean, that was part of the anarchist thing. They used to have his work. And I first met him in Philly, and then we had bumped into each other again in Jersey. And I know I'm talking about the East Coast a lot right now. It's just because, you know, it's just we don't put up with so much bullshit. And Donnie DePunk, you know, educated me about prison rape and a lot of that other shit that goes on in there, because that's how he became infected. He was arrested at a protest for something. He was a punk. He was a punk rocker. And he was arrested at a protest for something. And they threw him into a cell with the two guys that raped him all motherfucking night long. And they knew exactly what the fuck was happening. And not a goddamn thing was done. And it ended up, he became infected and he died from it. Now, he spent the rest of his goddamn life as Donnie DePunk because he wanted people to understand what the fuck was happening in the prison system. He wanted people to understand that men can be raped too. And that is not discussed. It's never discussed. It's never talked about. Nobody gives a shit, you know, because this is a male-dominated society. So men showing weakness, can't talk about that. Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing about homophobia. I mean, let's be honest. You know, fucking the majority of fucking men who cannot stand to be around gay men. And I have my criticisms. You know, I mean, the new gay, you know, what I call it, the new gay, I can't relate to. I'm too old. I don't understand the fashion. I don't understand a lot of your motherfucking attitudes and shit. I think a lot of you are fucking reckless, self-centered, and totally into yourselves. But, you know, the majority of fucking men who have a problem with gay men, consider themselves to be straight guys and they have a problem with gay men is they have the impression, they're afraid. Homophobia, right? They're afraid that they're going to be treated the way women are treated in society. And I've been in my share of gay bars and I've been groped, I've been grabbed, you know, it's happened, okay? And also you have to consider that if you're in a place where there's, you know, people trying to meet each other and there's activity, you know, that shit can happen. So, you know, you kind of have to understand that before you fucking get in. I'm not making any goddamn excuses. I'm not trying to be PC or whatever the fuck that means. Because, you know, political correctness any goddamn way is not a progressive term. That is a conservative term used to disparage progressives. But progressives can have their own goddamn madness, too. I mean, we saw it in Cuba. We saw it in Romania. You know, we saw it in the goddamn Soviet Union. And we're seeing it here, too. Because, you know, here it is. Me too, you know, it's real, and it should have been out there a long time ago. Feminine, for whatever reason, came and fucking went, right? Because they were dealing with that, a European problem, you know, in the European way. So, stare at my tits all day long, blah, da 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 da. That was the way they were fucking dealing. Okay, I get it. I understand. Pussy riot, what happened? I get it. I understand. But, see, the thing is, V2 isn't addressing a whole lot of goddamn shit. And like I said, I mentioned Donnie and Punk to point out the fact they don't talk about prison rape. You know, especially now when you talk about how many immigrants are being held in goddamn detention and being separated from their children. You know how many fucking women I've known that have gone into prison, done several years in prison and came out pregnant? When there's no conjugal visits? How the fuck does that happen? Is Me Too talking about that? If they are, you don't have to show me because I'm not aware. The same thing I mentioned about, you know, black men who are being falsely accused of rape and doing fucking, not just a few days. No. One man did 33 goddamn years. He would never get that fucking time back. He lost his entire fucking family. The woman was never prosecuted. The prosecutor was never prosecuted. Nobody was held accountable for this. So, no. You know, until Me Too starts to deal with all of it, you know, I can't, I, you know, just like, I said, you know, Black Lives Matter, I respect it, but I can't take it too seriously anymore. I can't. Because it came and it motherfucking went. Yeah, you knew you were going to fucking get shit when you got into it. But at the same time, I got to say to myself, okay, look, you know, Aboriginal news group, you couldn't even fucking send emails to each other. Right? So that fucked us up. And I'm not sure exactly what sort of hassle they've gone through. But you can also look at Occupy. What happened to fucking Occupy? We already know, you know, I mean, they were threatening somebody because we don't know who. We know that the Bureau stopped the threat, quote unquote threat, but they never named publicly anyway who the motherfucking people, who the people were who were behind the threat against the leaders of Occupy. Who, the only reason they were not assassinated was because they couldn't identify who the leaders of Occupy were. Read Naomi Prinz on this. Read Naomi Wolf on this. Read anybody on this. This is a, you know, this is not conspiracy theory here. I get it. But, you know, at what point, man? You know, you got more than 400 people have been killed by the police so far this year. So far this year. I mean, some are just goddamn start. 400 fucking people, man. I mean, how many of them are unarmed? I'm not sure. But, you know, it still. You know, why are we not paying attention to this? You know, and then if you're not going to, like I said, with Me Too, if you're not going to go after the Republicans, then, you know, what the fuck? You know, and the DNC, if they're not going after the goddamn Republicans, then what the fuck? So then, you know, what's the point in me coming in here? Well, I'll tell you briefly as I'm about to go out here. If it wasn't for Mike Cadell, if it wasn't for the, you know, Mike Cadell and a particular, monologue that he did, yeah, I probably wouldn't be in here because I've really, you know, I've just about had it, you know. But you know, Mike got me to consider that, well, fucking, he's going to keep fighting, and I know that there's a whole lot of other people like Grace Lee Boggs. She didn't goddamn stop fighting. Andrew, you know, Colbert, he wrote his last fucking editorial in while he was dying from cancer in the fucking hospital. So no, I'm not going to stop yet. I mean, you know, even fucking, do I even want to talk about this? Nah. Well, fuck it, yeah. Well, I might as well. William Buckley. Look, I watched this show growing up, and you know, I never told you I was a fucking liberal, did I? Right? You know, I watched this show growing up, and you know, despite every fucking thing else, you know, I mean, yeah, you disagree with the motherfucker, but at least there was some level of integrity there. I mean, he died at his goddamn desk too. And he also said that Bush, you know, when Bush II was in office, said if he had any goddamn integrity, if he, like any other European leader at this point, he'd resign for the good of the party. Well, no, Bush fucked everything up because he said that he was a failure and he made it. So, you know, so Trump comes up and he was a complete fucking failure. I mean, all these goddamn, you know, fucking deferments, you know, the motherfucking bankruptcies, fucking around with all of his wives. I mean, all these payouts, you know, he still has contractors and shit that are suing him. Trump University, Trump Steaks, Trump Ice Cream, you know, it's all fucked up, right? You know, and then, you know, he's president. And nobody seems to know what the fuck to do because, you know, we had a Putney-Swope moment when Obama got in, and then the real Putney-Swope moment came in, you know, the backlash was when, you know, fucking Archie Bunker came in office. Now, for my British listeners, you know, Alf Garnett, it was the role model for Archie Bunker. But Alf Garnett changed after a while, so they eventually had to get, you know, Archie to change after a while. But if you're noticing, you know, Trump represents exactly what the fuck he represents. Look at MAGA. I mean, look at them. Look at them. You know, like my mother used to say, you don't have to, you know, when white folks get fouled, she just look at them. You know, you'll find something out of place and shit. She's like, and then you realize that they're no fucking better than you. And I apply that to everybody, you know, frankly. But when you look at Trump and we look at the people behind him and it's like, what the fuck are we afraid of? What the fuck are we afraid of? They carry guns for a reason because they're scared of us. They're scared of immigrants. That's why they're cheering all this bullshit on. You know, they're scared of anybody that doesn't look like them. And the main thing with the fucking immigrant shit is these immigrants, you know, if they're not kissing their ass every 5 minutes, then you have to go. And you know that's what it's about. There was some motherfucker who was head of a police unit somewhere in the Midwest who said that the problem with black people in the United States is they don't show enough respect. So what he meant by that was, you know, they're not kissing our asses every fucking 5 minutes. So until they start doing that, you know, fuck these niggas, man. So, yeah, you know, we're dealing with a whole lot of goddamn confusion out here. And then, you know, now with this fucking Chihuahua blood scandal going on in Great White North of Occupy Canada. You know, it's like, okay, what the fuck is Indian then? You know, what is Native? So, you know, is it somebody who's directly related to their commune? You know, is it someone who's directly related by blood? You know, how are we going to define this the fuck then? And we're still going to let the feds, you know, work this out? Or, you know, we're going to work this out? And the people who say, no, we're going to work this out, are they pure themselves? You know, what the fuck is going on? So, you know, until those questions are answered, I suppose I'll stick around. And, you know, for what it's worth, thank you for sticking around. For those of you who have been taking the time to listen to what the fuck I've got to say here, you know, I know you're just as frustrated as I am. And I suppose that's it. So you've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And this is the Angry Indian. I'm sure Lulu has something interesting to listen to, so we're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
So this is Jen Gorlick. I'm an activist in D.C. I support a free and unoccupied Palestine, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, what's your first name, Daniel?
Does that voice sound familiar? That was Donald Trump posing over the phone as an executive from the Trump Organization. He called himself John Barron.
Most of the assets have been consolidated to Mr. Trump.
The call was recorded back in May 1984 by then Forbes magazine reporter Jonathan Greenberg, who is now sharing it, first with the Washington Post. Greenberg says the fictitious Trump Organization executive, John Barron, was trying to convince him that Donald Trump was rich enough to earn a higher spot on the Forbes 400, a list ranking America's richest people.
Are you saying that perhaps for tax purposes it's been, the ownership has been transferred to Donald Trump?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, and would you say, you know, in excess of 90% of the ownership, I believe?
I'd say in excess of 90. In fact, it's really closer to even the ultimate, but it's in excess of 90%, yes.
He figured out what he had to do in order to deceive me and get onto that list. And he did it very well.
In the end, Forbes estimated Trump's 1984 net worth to be about $400 million, earning him a higher spot on the list.
He lied about his father, that he owned all of his father's assets. He didn't own any of them till his father died in 1999.
Greenberg said Trump, posing as Barron, spoke with a slightly stronger New York accent and switched up the rhythm of his voice.
I'd like to talk to you off the record if I can, just to make your thing easier.
CNN has reached out to the White House for comment about this recording, but so far, no response. Trump, meanwhile, has been hiding behind fake names for decades. Back in 1980, Trump, apparently also acting as John Barron, gave the New York Times this quote after Trump, the developer, had smashed two sculptures at a demolition site in New York instead of giving them to a museum as promised. Notice the source is John Barron. Turns out, in a 1990 lawsuit, Trump himself reportedly admitted under oath that on occasion he has used that name. In the heat of the 2016 campaign, another alter ego resurfaced. The Washington Post published an old interview with Trump posing as a publicist named John Miller, a name he appeared to use so he could handle media calls, like this one with a People magazine reporter asking about Trump's breakup with girlfriend Marla Maples.
He's somebody that has a lot of options, and frankly, he gets called by everybody. He gets called by everybody in the book in terms of women.
Trump later told People magazine it was just a joke. But then on NBC, this.
It was not me on the phone, and it doesn't sound like me on the phone.
An audio forensic expert disputed that.
I'm confident that it's Donald Trump.
John Miller, John Barron, whatever the name, seems they all lead back to Donald Trump. Randy Kaye, CNN, Palm Beach, Florida.
Do you know what white folks call people like you and me in private? Niggers, dogs. Niggers.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
A virus from space kills all dogs and cats on the Earth. 1985, chimpanzees and gorillas are adopted as pets. The pets evolve into slaves, beaten and tortured victims of mankind. And now, a chimpanzee rises to give the word for the revolt of the apes.
My people will plot for the inevitable day of man's downfall. And that day is upon you now!
Conquest, the Planet of the Apes. It's all new, the biggest and most exciting ape picture yet, as a world of apes battles for domination of planet Earth. Conquest of the Planet of the Apes from 20th Century Fox, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. The most awesome spectacle in the annals of science fiction.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of the Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at the Dr. Vibe Show.
तपाईलाई थाहा छ नेपालमा पहिलो पटक कहिले एचआईभी संक्रमित व्यक्ति फेला परेको थियो
थाहा छ सन् 1988 मा
यतिका वर्ष बितिसक्दा एचआईभी एड्स को क्षेत्रमा के भए सकारात्मक परिवर्तनहरू कति आए कसले के गरे
के हामीले आफ्नो जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौ? तपाईले गर्नुभयो?
जवाफ आफैसँग खोजौ, जिम्मेवारी बहन गरौ।
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास।
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Unisex Stereo is having a Super Stereo Super Sale, and it's super. The super catchy catchy AM FM 8-track CB UHF VHF AC/DC 2000 watts per channel RMS super heavy metal amplifier receiver, normally priced for a super low $119.99.95, is now on super sale for a super $140 at Unisex Stereo. Our new 800 watt stereo headphones with a built-in reverb and 200 yard cord, super sale price at a regular $78.88 with an everyday super unisex low price of $54.44, is now super super low price at only $10. You can save 20, 30, 40, up to 50% on our everyday super unisex prices of 10, 20, and 30% off our regular super low prices. Save on our electrocutic wall knocker 16-way speaker systems. On our super glide automatic turntable with a base dust cover and a Hydromite light ride magnetic elliptical cartridge. Buy a $2,000 component system and get the phonograph needle absolutely free. Save on our 500-watt AM-FM clock radio. We guarantee you'll never oversleep again. And remember, everything here at Unisex is AC/DC. Unisex Stereo, open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday, Wednesday and Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, noon to 5 on Saturday, except on holidays when we're open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and 9 to 7 and 10 to 6 on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays, respectively. Unisex Stereo with one convenient location to serve you. 922 North 22nd Street, just under the 18th Street Bridge on the south side, a little east of West Avenue and South 18th. Simplicity is our middle name. Unisex Simplicity Stereo.
I'm Apache, but really that's the government's name because they can't say Zitlikai in there.
They will tell me how awesome they think it is that I've decided to be a part of my culture. And it's funny to me, it hits me really weird and I don't like it and I didn't know why at first, but it's because I haven't decided to be a part of my culture, I live it every day.
I'm more comfortable with the term native, divorced from Native American. I know there are people who use indigenous, and if there is one term I do not like to be called, is American Indian.
And for me, to be indigenous is to have an intimate and interconnected relationship to a homeland.
And so that's really important because land is, you know, tied to every aspect of who we are.
Being native in a city is almost a daily reminder of your people's erasure, of the fact that people don't even remember that you're here and that you exist.
But what I did encounter was just this preconceived notion that all Native Americans are dead.
I've had older white men come up to me and say, oh man, if this was 40 years ago, I can just do whatever I wanted to.
You know, the cattle outside doing the work and the dog inside the house, those are property. Those are the black folks in America. They're our property to white men. Then the exotic antelope on the wall, or the exotic, you know, that's the native, that's how natives are perceived in America.
We're treated like animals. They monitor our blood quantum. We're the only, I mean, besides dogs and horses, I don't know of any other animal that they monitor the blood quantum.
The way I explain it to people is like, imagine a pizza with different slices, and let's say 32 slices. Of the 32 slices, I'm 28 Apache. That's my particular blood quantum. And Native Americans in the U.S. are the only minority group who have to prove their nativeness on an Indian card.
It's used to divide Native people against each other because it can be used as a way to say, I am more Native than you. And I was a part of that, too. I used my 4/4 to kind of make myself feel better against other people.
The one drop rule, meaning that, you know, one drop of black blood makes you black, you know, that was to keep as many people oppressed or, you know, legitimize their oppression as possible. But on the other side, one drop of anything else completely dilutes you as a Native person. So if you're a Native person, you have a one drop of something else, then suddenly you're less Native. So it's the opposite.
Traditionally, within the Apache society, you go by the mother. And if the mother's recognized as Apache, she has her clan, the children are unquestionably Apache. Not in the American context, not when patriarchy trumps matriarchy. So what does that mean? My sisters are short 1/16th of a degree. What does that mean? Does that mean their pinkies aren't Apache? What does that mean?
You know, being a mixed race person is a whole another side of it, but that's a very common experience in our tribe. So it's not as if we're unusual in that way. What is unusual is the admixture of black.
My grandfather actually doesn't want people, if he hears that somebody from the tribe is coming over, he won't come out of his room because he doesn't want them to know that he's that complexion that he doesn't, I guess he doesn't want me to be affiliated with having African-American blood, but I mean, I say it. It's not going to change anything.
If it were up to the American government, Natives wouldn't be around because after a certain time, that blood will dilute. It will go out. And so if there's no Native peoples to provide benefits, then we're not obligated to meet these treaty rights. And if we're not obligated to meet these treaty contracts, then the land is available. The resources are available.
And I think that essential point about our claim to sovereignty, our claim to land, our claim to a culture, our claim to resources is one that gets lost if we don't insist upon the fact that we are nations.
And we have taken huge steps to decolonizing, and that proof comes from people being able to have the opportunities to speak their language, to be on their ancestral land.
But the thing with decolonization is that it's an ongoing process, just like grieving, just like any loss.
As much as possible now, I try to tell people that I have a Native American name, and maybe it doesn't mean anything to you, but it means everything to me. My name maybe doesn't have a romanticized Hollywood Indian name, but my name has more meaning than that. My name means that my family survived. My family survived disease. My family survived Catholicism. My family survived settler colonialism, colonism, and my family, they survived. I survived. My existence is resistance. Me saying my name is Skiam Tolks, that is resistance in and of itself.
They call it a pipeline, but those on the front lines know that black snake was sent for us to grow, to shed the skin our ancestors pray, of wounds old and calloused, so that we may stay, so that we may unite, unity our tool. No weapons are found in this court of rule. Men becoming ki'ai, steadfast in their guard, protecting women's hearts as their song become roots, roots to cast out healing for all sentient beings, to honor sacred mother, heart forward we heal. The salmon will run, the mauna will breathe, the rivers will flow. The rainbow is here, and prophecy tells us all generations will hear.
First Nations and our people that have been living here for thousands of years.
Stand up.
We've been fighting for our freedom since the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
Stand up. like Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier.
Stand up.
Now they poisoning the waters for our sons and our daughters, so we on the frontier.
We won.
One nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline. Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
To all my native people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my tribal people, recognize yourself, keep your head up.
Game on planet Earth, it's been spinning. We've been living and dying, but giving birth the first of many nations, celebrating them days when all that got made came after what
God made.
These days we cater to these internet memes, internet streams. It seems them streams aren't clean. We need the whole story seen. We're hassling before water has gasoline in it. Malcolm X moment, Martin Luther King with a dream and war boning. Wounded knee plus Alcatraz, doggone it. This is for the rock, with prayers we stand on it.
Oh yeah, we playing on it, the earth, we camp on it. In a sweat lodge, singing our songs with grandfathers. Heat rocks all in the spot, we splash on them. With a beatbox from my boy, be jam on it. Said a prayer for the black snake killers. Train on the front lines, they are the realest. Stand for your people, stand for your family. Stand with Standing Rock, stand for humanity.
It takes a group of people who actually care about Mother Earth and life and water being sacred and the land being sacred to say we stand up.
To all my native people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my tribal people, recognize yourself, keep your head up.
Mini Wachoni, water is life.
Mini Wachoni,
water is life.
Water is life.
Water is life.
Water is life.
I stand
with Standing Rock.
I stand with Standing Rock.
I stand with Standing Rock.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
I stand with Standing Rock. Stand up.
Woke up the giant, we won't go quiet.
To all my tribal people,
don't mistake our peace as we stand defiant.
To all my native people,
it's the calm before the storm and I can hear it coming.
To all my tribal people,
I'm ready for the battle when we ain't running.
Stand up, 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 stand up.
History is on a sad repeat. Is it liberty or we just acting free? As our land depletes from these hands of greed. See, fate is found, how we face the hounds. Take a vow for these sacred grounds. Make a sound that'll shake us out. Say aloud, what can save us now?
Hey yo, what's up y'all? This is DJ Spooky, that Subliminal Kid, giving y'all a wild style shout out. You're rolling with a podcast that's licensed under the Creative Commons license. So I just want to say, check it, download it, remix it, transform it. This is all about the Wild Style remix. So once again, Creative Commons, y'all, DJ Spooky, Wild Styles in your area, Subliminal Minded.
It's Citizenship Week, and if you want to become a U.S. citizen, you'll need to understand English. That's why Park and Learn Community College now offers English for you damn foreigners. Patient instructors will guide you through your lessons.
Okay, repeat it again. Please pull up to the drive-up window.
Please pull up to the drive-up window.
Please use the next stall. I'm cleaning in here.
Please use the next stall. I'm cleaning in here.
Good. No. Stop it.
Stop it.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Yes, if you're within the sound of my voice, but can't understand a word I'm saying, it's English for you damn foreigners at Park and Learn Community College.
Well, we hear a lot about censorship of the writer on TV. We hear a good deal about it in your own case especially.
Well, depending, of course, on the thematic treatment you're using, if you have the temerity to try to dramatize a theme that involves any particular social controversy currently extant, then you're in deep trouble.
For instance?
A racial theme, for example. The case in point, I think, a show I did for the Steel Hour three years ago, called Noon on Doomsday, which was a story which purported to tell what was the aftermath of the alleged kidnapping in Mississippi of the Toolboy, the young Chicago Negro. And I wrote the script using black and white initially. Then it was changed to suggest an unnamed foreigner. Then the locale was moved from the South to New England. And I'm convinced they'd have gone up to Alaska or the North Pole and using Eskimos as a possible minority, except I suppose the costume problem was of sufficient severity not to attempt it. But it became a lukewarm, vitiated, emasculated kind of show.
You went along with it?
All the way. I protested. I went down fighting, as most television writers do.
Yeah.
Thinking, in a strange, oblique, philosophical way, that better say something than nothing. In this particular show, though, by the time they had finished taking Coca-Cola bottles off the set because the sponsor claimed that this had Southern connotations, suggesting to what depth they went to make this a clean, antiseptically, rigidly acceptable show. Why, it bore no relationship at all to what we had purported to say initially.
Paddy Chayefsky has talked about the insidious influence of what he calls pre-censorship. How does that work?
Pre-censorship is a practice, I think, of most television writers. I can't speak for all of them. This is the prior knowledge of the writer of those areas which are difficult to try to get through. And so a writer will shy away from writing those things which he knows he's going to have trouble with on a sponsorial or an agency level. We practice it all the time. We just do not write those themes which we know are going to get into trouble.
Who's the culprit? Is it the network? The sponsor? It sure is not the FCC.
No, it's certainly not the FCC, ideally speaking, of course. It's a combination of culprits in this case, Mike. It's partly network. It's principally agency and sponsor. In many ways, I think it's the audience themselves.
How do you mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. About a year ago, roughly 11 or 12 months ago, on the Lassie show, this is a story usually told by Sheldon Leonard, who was then associated with the show. Lassie was having puppies, and I have two little girls, then aged 5 and 3, who are greatly enamored of this beautiful collie, and they watched the show with great interest, and Lassie gave birth to puppies. And Mike, it was probably one of the most tasteful and delightful and warm things depicting what is this wondrous thing that is birth. And after the show, I think there were many congratulations all around because it was a lovely show. The sort of thing I'd love my kids to watch, to show them what is the birth process and how marvelous it is. They got many, many cards and letters, sample card from the Deep South, this was. If I wanted my kids to watch sex shows, I wouldn't have had them turn on that. I could take them to burlesque shows. And as a result of the influx of mail, many of the cards, incidentally, as Sheldon tells it, were postmarked at identical moments, all in the same handwriting, but each was counted as a singular piece of mail. And as a result, the directive went down that there would be no shows having anything to do with puppies, that is, in the actual birth process. Well, obviously, it is this wild lunatic fringe of letter writers that greatly affect what the sponsor has in mind.
You can understand the position of the sponsor.
In many ways, I suppose I can. He's there to push a product.
He has a considerable stake, thus, in what goes on the air.
Most assuredly. And in those cases where there is a problem of public taste, in which there is a concern for eliciting negative response from a large mass of people, I can understand why the guys are frightened. I don't understand, Mike, for example, other evidences and instances of intrusion by sponsors. For example, on Playhouse 90, not a year ago, a lovely show called Judgment at Nuremberg. I think probably one of the most competently done and artistically done pieces that 90's done all year. In it, as you recall, mention was made of gas chambers.
Yeah.
And the line was deleted, cut off the soundtrack. And it mattered little to these guys that the gas involved in concentration camps was cyanide, which bore no resemblance, physical or otherwise, to the gas used in Stowe. They cut the line.
Because the sponsor was...
He did not want that awful association made between what was the horror and the misery of Nazi Germany with the nice, chrome, wonderfully antiseptically clean, beautiful kitchen appliances that they were selling. This is an example of sponsor interference which is so beyond logic and which is so beyond taste. This I rebel against.
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the 7 generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with asexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of a reproductive right. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Only 28% of Americans believe in evolution.
62% want creation science taught along with evolution in our schools.
44% want creation science taught exclusively.
You are all about to learn that you didn't come from monkeys and slime. All of you were created in the image and likeness of God.
But didn't we evolve from prior organisms?
Yes, we did. Those organisms were named Adam and Eve.
Then why do we share 99% of our DNA with chimpanzees?
The Bible doesn't teach about chimpanzees.
What about redundant DNA and junk DNA? Does the Bible teach about that?
I can tell you one thing. There's no redundant DNA in hell.
Our children are our future.
Let's try not to turn them into dangerous idiots.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको. बेल बजाओ. घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें. ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fuse Box Radio Broadcast at blackradiosback.com. You're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right, peace.
And it should be given a little time. Everything today is people are worried about time. Baseball is too long. 2 hours and 10 minutes is too long for a ball game. So, you know, this is not a good game anymore. Football, well, now that's a little bit better. But now watch, they'll be complaining pretty soon that they should only have 2 quarters in a football game. Sure, it's too long. Keeps you away from your martinis and all that stuff and the important things you'd be doing on Sunday afternoon. Everything is getting too long to people. And when I hear people say that about a presidential campaign, then I worry. And I also worry when the important things of our time are reviewed on the radio and television page and not on the page of the editorials. Did you notice that the debate between the two senatorial candidates here in New York was reviewed on the radio page in the Times? That's significant. It's a good show. Very good show. Congratulations. Barry Gray pulled a coup. Great show, Barry. But it's a little more than the show, friends. But nevertheless, we're coming full circle. You know, speaking of shows, I love to collect great cliches in the editorial context and also in particularly in the days of... there's no better day for the reaper of the cliché, the collector of the cliché, than during an election. It's as ritualized and as stylized today as a Western, as the traditional ballet. And tonight I heard a guy do it. He said, "Barry, I would like to state at this time that I am saddened. My heart is saddened that this campaign has degenerated into a campaign of smear and innuendo. I have striven at all times to keep the campaign on the issues and the important questions, but my ridiculous, my dishonest, sneaky pickpocketing opponent has dealt only in personalities. I..." And I thought, well, you know... You know, it's funny when you listen to a political argument that the other guy's facts are lies, always. They're dodging the issue. And anytime you come up with your particular lie, it is called a deep insight into the issues and the problems at hand. And it goes on and on. And I enjoy it. As far as I'm concerned, the political wars are one of the most exciting things that a man faces or deals with in his lifetime. I think this is why people get so involved in it. 3 days after a president is elected, they hardly remember anymore all the stuff. You remember when everybody was all excited and fist-fighting and yelling in the street when Kennedy was running against Nixon? And then it was all over, and it was like 3 days later, you know, it was the country went on. I wonder how... I'd like to be able to count on... just the number of people, ever since I've been old enough to hear and listen and to understand vaguely what's going on around me, every last election that I can remember, there have been large numbers of people around me say, "If that bum is elected, I am getting ready to leave the country. I have already bought my ticket." And the same crowd is still around, still yelling it. I have not known one guy to leave the country. I did know one guy that went out for 2.5 days and his money ran out and he came back. You know, he felt a little silly, you know. He got in a canoe and rowed towards Honolulu and, you know, got seasick and turned around and came back and figured he'd wait a couple of more days and he'd wait to good weather. And he's still out there now. He's selling canoes, by the way, on the beach for those who want to row to Honolulu. But, you know, just maintain a little semblance I suppose you can say, perspective. That, believe me, no matter who gets elected, you will not have to leave the country tomorrow. And if you did, it wouldn't do you any good, friend. You'd still be an American, and you'd still get bugged when you get to England. I did. Wouldn't do you any good. You're not going to escape mankind. And furthermore, you know, to be perfectly objective as I can be about it, which is not any more objective than any other human being can be, who has, you know, whose eyes pop out and whose ears sweat whenever politics are mentioned. These guys throwing rocks through windows, me. I find that the American population has almost as great a misunderstanding of the presidency as the English. Or maybe it's the other way around. I can't tell. But it seems to most Americans that if you elect, we're not really electing a president, we're electing a dictator. Large numbers of people think that that you elect this guy and tomorrow morning he can cause a war. Or if you elect this guy, tomorrow morning everything's going to be happy, there will be no segregation problems, and everybody will be, you know, pleased. Or if you elect this guy tomorrow, there's going to be riots in the streets, or whatever it might be. And yet, I wonder just how much power that a president has. In fact, Kennedy was in for 2 years before his tragedy and got very little actually accomplished, actually through. The president today is not, well, of course, the president in our system never has been like any other world ruler. You probably are aware that the British Prime Minister, when he is elected, when his party goes in, he appoints a government, literally. Isn't that true, Jeff? He appoints a government. Well, believe me, whoever's elected tomorrow will not appoint a government. I can assure you of that. He would like to, maybe, sometimes. They get pretty teed off, but they're not going to appoint any government. And the British somehow think that the American president is something like a cross between Charles de Gaulle, who was practically an absolute ruler. France has always had absolute rulers of one kind or another, no matter what their system seems to say. It always winds up with one guy standing on top of a giant platform with a bunch of other guys running around down the bottom and getting mad and trying to knock them off. Sure. I had a Frenchman talking to me about that the other day in England. He was talking about America, you know, being a violent country. He says, you know, you've had five presidents and you had this, you know, the assassination. Well, for crying out loud, how many times were guys trying to shoot De Gaulle in the past year? He went around in an armored car. You remember there were guys under every bush there for a while. You remember that? In fact, they shot his Citroën a couple of times full of holes there like a sieve. And he forgot all about that when I said, well, what about this? He said, oh, well, that's De Gaulle. So, well, you know, I mean, that's... So, you know, you don't know which way to what turn, but it is an exciting thing. And I remember, oh, some of the great election nights. Do you ever think back on a great election nights of the past? I remember one time, I mean, where you were doing, what went on around you during an election. I remember working in a radio station. I was in college, as a matter of fact. And I used to work in the station that was owned by a political candidate. And before the days this was just a guy's investment, that's all. It was that's it. He owned this radio station, and he was a rock-bound Republican. And in fact, it was just a known fact that everybody in the station was going to vote this absolute straight ticket right down the line. Everybody walked around with the smile of righteousness, that we were going to rot the rascals out and all that stuff. And, you know, the whole business. And the boss would come in and he would rally the troops. And he didn't exactly say that if we didn't vote for his candidate, we'd get fired. He did imply strongly that if the candidate did not win, his candidate, that we might be holding auditions the day afterwards, because he would suspect. And so, you know, everybody, oh, yeah, I'll tell you the truth. So everybody sat around, you know, they were all out campaigning for the candidate. Everybody was jockeying, trying to get a good spot on the schedule, you know, and everything. Well, I don't have to tell you that what happened was that night, everybody sneaked out to vote. And they all went out, and guess, you know, I don't even have to tell you who they voted for. They did not vote for the candidate that the boss was for. And so that night when we all sat around and the returns were coming in, and the big man was sitting across from the microphone from me. You see, he was a famous senator, and he would come on and make statements. I would be sitting there, and I would get the cue from NBC, and they would say, now we take you to the Midwest, where Senator Watanabe will tell you what he thinks, how it's going out there. And I would say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, speaking to you from the studios, here is Senator Alfred M. Watanabe. And he would say, well, upon the basis of our early returns, we are confidently feel here at headquarters that when the returns from the western states begin to come in, that the tide will, well, you know, the old hogwash, and the organs were playing behind him, and the mouth harps, and I could hear somebody playing an accordion down the street, you know, and the violins were playing. Of course, he knew that they were going down to defeat, and so did we. And when it was all over, they had this giant victory celebration there. They had hams and everything. And I can remember the staff all standing around eating the pickled ham and drinking the beer and a couple of little bunting, and the trio was playing over in the corner, and nobody showed. But the senator himself was delighted. He was delighted, and he was absolutely out of his mind with happiness because he had won the nomination. And even though his party went down to ignominious defeat, he had won. So I learned a little bit about politics that night, which I've never forgotten. Our great party, it's great because it's nominated me. It's a pretty rotten party when it doesn't nominate me. But I remember another election. I remember the one in the Army when when Roosevelt was running his last term. And everybody was sitting around, and the returns were coming in. And it was a very peculiar, curious kind of election. That was the kind that you can't really describe because by present-day standards, because first of all, Cronkite wasn't there. It's very hard, you know. We didn't know exactly who to cheer for or what. Cronkite wasn't around, and Brinkley and Huntley were in the future. You know, they were just plain ordinary votes and elections and guys giving speeches. And in those days, you could hear the guys give speeches. Actually, when they gave speeches, you could hear them on the radio. You could actually hear them. They did not have a running commentary between Huntley and Brinkley over it, talking about the ladies' hats from the Ohio delegation and the funny sign up there on the balcony. And everybody, you're going to hear a lot of that tomorrow night, I'm sure. And a lot of extraneous stuff is going to be going on, and it's a big show. But I remember that election particularly because it was the first one that I really had any kind of actual involvement in. As far as, not a matter of vested interest or not, but it just seemed to somehow involve you. And they were bringing in the returns, and we had no television set or anything like that. And the returns were coming in from headquarters somewhere, and they would come in over the signal corps receiver we had. And you'd hear a return, somebody would bring back a sheaf of paper from the signal center, and everyone would look at it, and slowly it became obvious that that the president, Roosevelt, was getting reelected. And everyone felt, and it wasn't that anybody was a Democrat or a Republican or anything. It just seemed like he was the chief, you know. He was the commander-in-chief. That was the end of that. And we would have felt very funny had there been another commander-in-chief. And even though it was a subtle thing, very, very peculiar, and you begin to wonder what the nature of leadership is. What it is that men see in other men that want them to be up on top. The intense desire that we all have to somehow have something to follow. To have something up there. Somebody who somehow seems to know and is in charge. That has the reins in his hand. And have you noticed more and more that the campaigns are getting to the point now where we don't really concede that the candidates are actually human? Now, I mean in this sense, that I literally believe that in the next 10 years or so, a candidate will charge another candidate with sneezing, which proves him to be mortal, which means that how can anybody who sneezes and has stomach trouble, how can any guy with a bad knee, how can he really do anything about the awful situation in Indochina or whatever it might be? We're looking for a god. We can't have guys that have bunions. I mean, believe me, if it ever comes out that a political candidate for presidency has a terrible case of bunions, I suspect there's going to be a tremendous to-do made about that in the next couple of years. Because more and more we're aiming towards the Superman. And it's curious the kind of, I suppose you say the combination of folklore and folk myth, all these things which go up to make up the drive or the urge that people have to elect this man, to believe in this man, or whoever it is. I'm not talking about any particular candidate, Goldwater or Johnson. It is an urge that is very mystical and goes all the way back to the earliest days. I suspect one of the really significant moments in mankind's evolution as an animal, as apart from all the other animals, was the day that he first, either by acclimation or a subtle process of elimination, the first leader was born. The first leader was created. I mean, up to that point, there were just a bunch of guys jostling around and hiding in the woods. The squirrels, who do not have leaders, as far as we know. The camels, we do not know who the leader of the camels is. And as far as we know, there is no leader of the camels. And no animals really have leaders the way men do. There might be the sexual head of a tribe of or a herd of animals. That's not quite the same thing. Not at all. No. A leader is something entirely apart and removed from the elk who has beaten all the other males and is now in charge of all the female elk, which is literally what a herd evolves into or comes out of. No, there was a moment in time when everyone said, you know, there's a lot of trouble around here, around the cave. Boy, look at that wind blow. Look at all them trees are falling down out there. And that terrible lake out there. And look at the shark out there. We better get somebody who's in charge. And there was this little guy scrunching back at a rock over there, and he's wearing his leopard skin, and somebody says, well, what about Og? And Og is saying, well, I do not choose to run. And so the next thing you know, they're carrying him around on their shoulders, and everybody's cheering, and Og is the first. He's the first one in charge. Well, of course, a couple of days later, one of the tribesmen got bitten right in half by a shark. Well, immediately there was discontent began to settle. What about Og? Wasn't he supposed to do something about this? What about this? Well, then a couple of days later, somebody got belted on top of the head with a coconut, and he's dead. And the discontent, the winter of discontent, begins to set in. And sure enough, by the fall, Og is served up for dinner one day. And a new leader is elected. And up to this point, I was listening to some of the most fantastic drivel tonight. Being given as serious commentary. Like, for example, you don't like what's going on in Southeast Asia? Well, do something about it. As if the guy you elect can do something about the whole world. The implication that if you don't like what's going on in Russia, elect A. Oh, yeah? You're in for an awful, awful serious disillusionment if you elect A and Russia continues to be Russia. I heard one guy say, well, you know, you're looking for issues. You don't like what's going on in China. Well, I'm not so sure that by electing somebody one way or the other, you're going to be able to make China fly away. This is one of the great, sad facts of life, and you just have to face it. I think one of the most interesting things about our elections in recent years is our tendency to be disillusioned 15 minutes after the inauguration. Believe me, do you know that the poor Kennedy, 15 minutes after Kennedy was sworn in, already the cartoonists were preparing the first anti-Kennedy cartoons, primarily because they had a sneaking suspicion already that they had not elected a god, somebody could hurl thunderbolts and change the world by moving his hand or by sending out great waves of dark clouds that would wipe away all injustice or whatever it is that they're against. And we're, this growing tendency in American life to blame external problems on the president could very well lead us into some very, very deep and devious political waters. Eventually, somebody will come up and say, well, all right, you've had all this problem. Put me in charge now, at last. I will take charge of all those things. And look out. Look out, there's been other guys that have done that before in the past. I'm just saying here that it is a tendency, and this is not a political, this is actually an apolitical show tonight. But listening to these speeches has been, again, a revelation to me how closely and how further we're drifting in that direction. If there is a wild situation, if tomorrow morning, believe me, if tomorrow morning if the government of Peru decides to blow up the castle, that would be blamed on one or the other of the candidates. It really would be. That somehow he should have done something about this, or should have known something. And this is a dangerous problem, because what we do, what we're really implying there, is that the man in office should be and really is a Superman if he's a good president. If he's a good president, he can really take care of all the trouble in the world, if he's good. He can deal with all the problems of America, if he's good. And if he doesn't take care of those problems, if he does not make all the problems go away, it shows, one, he's incompetent, two, he's a crook, three, he's covering up. And this is the way it is in America. It is a firm belief. And of course, another one of the strong drifts that is evidenced in, incidentally, all parts of the world, I heard it in England too, was to blame the 20th century, literally, to blame the 20th century and the conditions of the 20th century on whoever is in the opposite party. In short, if you don't like the way the traffic is, it's that rotten mayor. No one would ever admit that there's 18 million too many cars or the fact that the streets are too narrow. It's the mayor that's doing it. He's making it like that at 6 o'clock. He's making it so you don't get a cab. And this is a fascinating development. It really is. You know, people have lost perspective. I guess we've drifted so far from reality that we like to think that life itself is a big TV script and Patty Chayefsky should write it better. And that if it doesn't come off the way it should come off, it's because somebody is, again, lousing up. It's a deliberate attempt on somebody's part to nobble you, to hamper the good, simple little man who only wants to live in peace. And now they're covering up again. You know, the great they. This is fascinating. I hear more and more political commentators with a straight face somehow implying that politicians are a separate breed apart, roughly akin to the mafia. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing, too, that's coming around. And these are so-called intelligent men, and yet they continue to promulgate this guff. And they're applauded. And the more you say that, the more you will be applauded. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The more you imply that all candidates, all politicians are crooks, the more you will be considered a deep and serious thinker on the subject of politics. And yet, of course, it's a patently ridiculous thing to say, and yet it never seems to occur to people. And I know a lot of people out there are going to be young. What do you mean they're all our crooks? Well, if you think that, man, you're setting yourself up for a man who will come years from now and who will say, yes, that's true, all politicians are crooks. Elect me, I'm not a politician. And he'll look out at you with his stainless steel fangs gleaming in the dark, and you will elect him because you will finally say, at last a guy's come along who is not a politician. And we know, we define all politicians as crooks. And so at last a non-politician has come along, we're going to elect him and keep politicians out of office. In fact, that is exactly the program that Hitler ran on, you know. He did. He did. He says, get all those rotten politicians out. Put a good man in. A simple man of the people. Well, I don't know whether I'd like to put my lot in with a simple man of the people. And incidentally, what is so wrong with being a professional politician? You know, we honor professional men in every field. We honor professional men in law. We honor professional men in medicine. We honor professional men in every possible area, including radio. We like to hear professional radio people around. We like to hear and see professional actors. And somehow to call a man a professional politician is to tell him he's a crook. Well, I'm sorry. Politics is a highly complex business, extremely complex business. And I like to see it in the hands of a few politicians who know something about it. I'm sorry. We have some of the greatest curses that have ever hit us is once in a while when the simple-minded amateur gets in charge. And there have been several in our past history. Grant was a classic example. Just a plain, ordinary amateur in the world of politics, and boy, it showed. For those of you who are interested, of course, you know, history is there, and we've had several examples, some of them even more recent than that. But the amateur is applauded in politics. Why? I don't know. It's one of those myths that's grown up that somehow with amateurism goes honesty. Oh, does it? Oh, I've known some pretty sneaky amateurs in my time. Oh, in every field. Amateur sports, amateur this, amateur folk singing, amateur everything up and down the line. Amateurism does not automatically convey and give to the person who is the amateur honesty, reliability, and insight, certainly not that. And yet, this is one of the myths of America. Tomorrow, at this time, it'll probably be all over, or at least the votes will be cast. It may not be over with us. We may not know, but it will be, in effect, over. And I hope that enough people who are going to vote have listened to some of the speeches. And if you didn't listen to the speeches, if you don't know what you're voting for, look out. I wonder at this attitude on the part of so many people in public life today that voting is in itself a positive virtue. That's a questionable thesis. So may the best man win. And I'll tell you this, after it's all over, let's all pretend he's the best man anyway. Because that's about all we can do. And cynic? No, I'm not. I am not so cynical as to feel that whoever gets elected, I am going to have to leave the country 20 minutes later. If that's the case, our country is in a very bad way. Our system of government is a very shoddy system of government. If one man can get in and completely turn it into what, you know, where you got to jump into a birch bark canoe and take off for Oceania. If that's the case, well, we deserve to go to Oceania. All of us floating in a rubber raft with a leak in it. I am not the one to claim that if Goldwater or if Johnson gets elected, I'm not going to throw any towels in and any. And one thing, if the wrong guy gets elected and you feel you've got to leave the country, that's the time to stay and fight it. Don't chicken out, for crying out loud. Either that, you know, Star Spangled Banner and all of it, old man. Chin up, you know. It's going to be all right.
Anarchism is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. It is not robbery and murder. It is not a war of each against all.
Tune in to Subversion 1312, the 4ZZZ Anarchy Show.
Tuesday from 9 till 10 p.m. on 102.1 FM or streaming 4ZZZFM.org.au.
How about trying this future on for size?
Or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
How I've been affected by gun violence over the years is through deaths of friends and family members and associates.
When I was 5 years old, I was held at gunpoint in a home invasion.
I've gone to the juvenile detention centers and I've met dozens of young kids, babies really, who have been affected by gun violence.
Directly, I've lost a few friends, but I think why this touches my heart is having children of my own.
You know, I've been at parties where, you know, I had just left the party and, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, you know, I heard that, you know, somebody got shot and didn't make it.
There are a lot of people benefiting off of our pain, and it's time we do something.
I'm here to unload my investment because I think that it's important that we start kind of seeing where our money is going.
It's time to go to your financial advisor and demand that there are no gun investments in your 401k.
Even if you don't have investments, you can still help spread the word.
This is something everyone can do.
So if you push your people that have 401ks, it might be your grandma, it might be your cousin, this effort can make a big impact.
I'm unloading for my loved ones that I lost.
I'm unloading for my 18-year-old self.
I'm unloading my 401k for the future of my children.
I'm unloading.
I'm unloading
for my family and their future.
I'm unloading so that my daughter can grow up in a safe, loving world.
Unload and join the movement.
Use hashtag I'm unloading to pledge your support for gun-free investing.
These are Manfred and Leo Friedman. They are my first cousins. Not distant relatives, first cousin. A few months after this picture was taken, 75 years ago, the Nazis put them on a train and then exterminated them, like vermin. They might have been saved if the U.S. had approved their parents' application to emigrate, but it didn't, because Americans thought Jews were shifty and dangerous. For some people in the White House, the Holocaust exists only in the history books. For the Jewish people, it is a collective national trauma. But along with Manfred and Leo and their parents, the Nazis murdered my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, and countless other relatives. So for me, and for many other Jews, the Holocaust is still very, very personal, each and every day. Which is why I felt that, in recent days, the White House bashed my head in 3 times in a row. First, when President Trump's ban on Muslims brought back painful family memories of America's locked gates. Second, because the Holocaust is first and foremost about Jews, Manfred and Leo, along with 6 million others, were murdered because they were Jews, but the White House erased Jews from its Holocaust Day statement. And third, because White House spokesman Sean Spicer had the chutzpah to describe complaints about the omission as pathetic nitpicking and to proclaim that Trump had gone out of his way to mark Holocaust Day. In other words, the Jews should be grateful and shut their mouths. But I'll tell him what's truly pathetic. One, that the White House, hopefully out of ignorance, tried to minimize the centrality of Jews in the Holocaust, like some Holocaust deniers. Two, that its excuse for doing so is a perverse kind of political correctness of trying to be, and I quote, incredibly inclusive. Three, that rather than apologize or admit a mistake, the president's automatic response is attack, attack, attack. Four, that the administration still can't comprehend how much it hurts so many Jews, especially in America. And five, that Trump believes that support for Israeli policies or that a Jew was involved in writing the statement makes everything better. But I'll tell you what's really pathetic, that Israel didn't say a word, that Prime Minister Netanyahu and his ministers would have torn Obama apart if he dared do something similar, gave in to political expediency, cowardice, and just plain indifference. That was truly pathetic and hurtful and very, very personal.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan. We hate niggers, we hate Jews, we hate faggots, and we hate specs. We don't have to have a reason to hate. People need to get off your ass and wake up. This is America.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This ends our news flash.
Haitian drum.
Sweet city Roma. I can see your face. I can hear your voice. I can almost touch you. Sweet city Roma. Oh, my banjo and me, we got a thing for singing. Yeah. Oh, si bon, 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 si bon.
Nagyataga na tanjit sa ang link di ay e-extension.gov.ph. Mauna ang link. Nato'y listahan sa mga kurso. So niya na ang mga kurso. Ipakita, Ranil, daghana aning kurso o gibasa ni nato. Arita sa organic, ha? Organic. Sus, di ni maato, eh. Pero tindaghana ang mga kurso na gibutang din ni. So arita sa sustainable agriculture. Organic fertilizer for sustainable agriculture. Vermicomposting, integrated rice duck farming, insects away, the alternative way. Aricos organic fertilizer. Ako i-click ang usa sa mga link, ha, sa organic fertilizer. Unya na, site policy agreement, you must agree to the policy, dito tag yes. Although responsible na, ha, imo dyan ang basahon, sa di pa ka mo yes, pero di imen eh. explain the importance. Mauni ang organic fertilizer for sustainable agriculture. Full adoption of organic crop production technology depends largely on the availability and cost of organic fertilizer. Tinuod ni. Kay kun tuga-tuga ka ng organic farming, unsa may imong ihatag anang imong tanom? Kaluoy lang sa uwan? Kaluoy lang sa yuta? Imo na siyang i-reinforce og organic fertilizer. So unsaon man imo paghimog organic fertilizer? Mao tigi tudlo ni ato ni Tads Bintulan nato last week kadtong pag activate og good bacteria aron nga maoy mo decompose, mutabang og paspas og decompose sa atong waste, no, kana mga atong libya nga mga pagkaon. Ang iyong gisgutan katong mga atay sa isda, katong mga hasang sa isda na maayo kaayo para organic fertilizer. One solution is for growers to produce their own requirement using whatever available organic residues in their farm. So, ang tinubdan ko no sa organic fertilizer, bisan unsa nga basura biya nimo diha sa imong tungkaran, sa imong pinoyanan. This online course discusses methods of production and application of organic fertilizer for your own use. So tudluan ka ini kursuha unsa paghimo sa